Well, good morning. It's wonderful to be here. Again, this is Who Are We? What's Settled and Unsettled in Classical Education? There are handouts being distributed, so please get hold of one of those. What I'm presenting for you is the results of a survey that I conducted of the ACCS constituency, and particularly of people who have been involved in classical Christian education within ACCS for at least 5 years or more. And I see a number of people filing in. That's the way to get people to take their seats and find their places to start talking. But I'm curious, some of you know what this is about because you've taken the survey. How many in here took the survey the results of which I'm about to present? Put your hands up. I'm curious to see how many of you. Yeah, now you want to know if your name shows up, right? If I'm going to mention you by name. Okay, a few of you, but most of you haven't, so maybe you don't even know what's happening here. But I've worked together with Patch Blakey, the executive director of ACCS, to prepare this survey. And in preparing the survey, I worked with a couple of other people who reviewed it. And the goal of the survey was to identify, as the talk title suggests, what's settled and unsettled in classical education, to find out what our views of classical education are in some details and in some particular areas, to see where, if any, are there areas of widespread like-mindedness, and where is there a diversity of opinion within our circles. And the goal, ultimately, then, if we can find out where we're like-minded and where we have a divergence of opinion within our ranks, can we then use this to frame the next generation of conversations that we need to be having? So that was the goal in an attempt to provide a service to ACCS, particularly those who have been around for a while and who have been engaged in conversations, trying to bring the conversations together. There are a number of reasons why I did this. My own personal history with ACCS goes back to the beginning. This is the 16th annual conference. It's the 14th one that I've been to and spoken at. I've been around a while, and I'd also like to think that I've grown up a lot since that first conference. I hope you don't check out the tapes of anything that I said back then or hold me to it. Some of you remember back in the days when I used to do book plugs. I still get razzed about that from time to time, but I've been around for a little while. And so this has put me in contact with a lot of you, and I've had conversations, as many of us have who have been around a while, anecdotal indications of this is what we're doing at our school, this is what we're doing at our school over here, lots of visits to schools that I've had. I've also had contact with many ACCS schools because you're sending your students to me at New St. Andrews College. I get phone calls from a lot of you hoping that I will, through New St. Andrews College, be able to populate your faculty. And so I've had a lot of contacts. Those are my angles of contact with a lot of you. Anyway, these conversations have indicated to me that there are conversations that are happening out there where some people probably need to be brought together on. Some people over here might not be aware of what some people are doing over there, and there's a divergence of opinions, and I'm trying to settle where those areas were and bring clarity to that. So that's my own personal history with this, but I also will make a couple of observations about ACCS and ACCS culture as it stands, which I think calls for the need for a survey like this. First of all, it has to do with my sense of where ACCS is in its phase of life, its stage of life. We're moving out of the honeymoon period. This is the 16th annual conference. The honeymoon period is characterized by a whole lot of excitement, a whole lot of energy, coupled with an equal measure of naivete, or perhaps more naivete than anything else. And all ideas and everything is theory, but we're all starting and kind of groping in the dark. I think we've moved out of the honeymoon period, or we're moving out of it anyway. Another way of looking at this is to think of it as that we're moving out of the startup mode. We've been around for 16 years. We're out of startup mode and into more established routines. What used to be fresh and new is now kind of the day-to-day, workaday world for a lot of us in ACCS. We are maturing. We had a lot of pressures and pressing issues when we started, but the issues that we face today are different ones, reflecting a different stage of life. The pressing question for classical educators 16 years ago was, what does it mean for me to offer a classical education next week? And now we're asking ourselves, what does it mean for us to continue offering classical education in over the next 50 years? The pressures of startup are real pressures, but they're different than the pressures that are placed upon a school that's somewhat more established. The founders are still around, but the founders are moving on. They're not going to be around forever, and there's been an injection of a lot of new and fresh thinking. The culture and climate of ACCS is moving along and shifting. And so, anyway, that's a stage of life observation that I think calls for the need for a survey and discussion like this. And secondly, another factor about ACCS culture I would call the maverick factor. The maverick factor. Our willingness in ACCS circles to do something new. There's a certain bent, a certain craziness that you need to embrace in order to be part of this enterprise called classical education, classical Christian education. People who are here because they have been open to new and familiar ideas. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here, okay? But then what we are now is populated by people who are open to new and unfamiliar ideas and are willing to entertain them and to drive them around the block. This is the maverick factor, the maverick mentality. And now you get people like this who are all together, and once they come into ACCS, they haven't lost the quality of being open to new and different ideas. The conversation is continuing. The conversation is continuing. The same openness that got us here is also the same openness that abides and inhabits a lot of our interactions now. And so there are divergences of opinion. And so I would say for the stage of life factor and for the maverick factor, a survey like this and some sort of taking inventory of what we all think of one another would be helpful. So that was what was motivating and driving this. So I wanted to try to identify the discussions that we need to have that will actually move us forward. And that's the practical project here, is what conversations can we have with one another that can take us forward. We don't want to simply rehash old ground. Do we have enough consensus to know what discussions might be out of bounds, conversations that are outside the camp? Well, if that's the case, then what's in and what's out of the camp? Okay, do we know what that is? When you couple this with the fact that classical Christian education has kind of become a buzzword, pretty broadly, you know, there's also a fad quality to this as well. And there are plenty of new and different ideas and all kinds of harebrained ideas that traffic under the adjective classical. And so where are we settled here? All right. So we're moving out of startup mode. We've got a maverick mentality, but onto the survey. Hopefully that clarifies what I was after here. And you see the tabulation of the results. The first few questions 1 through 3, were demographic in nature, taking inventory of who is filling this out. A quick comment on question 1. I wanted to limit this survey to people who had 5 years or more experience, in order to avoid the Young Turk presence in the survey. Remember what I said about the maverick mentality? Well, a lot of people, we're all still mavericks here, but I thought people who've been around in this, doing this a little bit so that they've had time to sort of let classical Christian education gestate within their thinking and resonate with their experience to bump around in the real world of classical education for a while. I thought getting input from that set would be most valuable. I think that you see the response count, 71 who were participating for 5 to 10 years, 11 to 15 years, 28 people, and 15 people, 16 plus years. That indicates that classical Christian education is still very young. And back 16 years ago, there really were very few people involved. And so that just reflects the natural growth. Then you see I've split out in question two, asked respondents to characterize themselves as elementary, secondary, administrator, or board member. You'll notice that there were 115 respondents to that question, but if you tally up the response count, you'll learn something about classical Christian educators, which is that they multitask. They are non-specialists. So many people identified themselves, most people identified themselves as being in more than one of those categories. And then school information, I will say this, of the 117 respondents total, 43 different schools, representatives from 43 different schools participated in the survey. I'm very grateful for that. Patch tells me that that's an outstanding response, participation. 43 different schools. The greatest number of respondents from any one school was 16. There's a school that had 16 people who had five or more years of classical Christian education represented among them. I had at least four respondents from 11 different schools. So that'll tell you a little bit about, again, 43 schools represented and multiple respondents from most of them. And the average was roughly three respondents per school then. So that gets at the schools represented. So those are the people who took the survey. And, again, I was trying to take an inventory of what we all think of classical Christian education. So I'm going to get into the meat of it then, questions four through six. If you take a look at the questions there, and by the way, if you're following this in the notebook, I published an earlier version of the survey in the notebook, but the handout is really what you should be following along with here. Okay, we have some people who don't have the handout. Where are the... Oh, we can get them from the stage here. Okay, please hold up your hand if you need the handout. Yeah, you late people. All right, it looks like a spreadsheet printout. That's what we're looking at here. And I'm moving into questions four through six in the survey. And you notice then that those questions prompt a ranking of different subjects. And some people were actually bothered at the question and the way I framed the question. I need to explain these three questions as a group here for a moment. First of all, some objected at the outset to assigning any priority to different subjects because they should all be integrated. And it really doesn't matter which subjects you choose because classical education is all about methodology. And so I'm going to rank all of them equally. And I thought that was an interesting response. That was in the written comments from some of the respondents. And some people recoiled at the framing of the question the way I did. More frequently, I had people object to, if you look at question five, for example, that's the dialectic stage. Why don't you have logic there? Or question six, why isn't rhetoric there? And a lot of people expressed some angst that I didn't have logic available to be ranked. And so I want to explain a little bit of the method of my madness. I thought it was an astute comment. But actually, I had intended that. And I want to explain again the way I framed, or why I framed these questions here, questions four, five, and six. First of all, I didn't want seven subjects to rank. I thought that if I'm trying to take an inventory, the more subjects that I'm listing in the ranking, the less valid the results are going to be because the more confusing the question itself is going to be. And I thought I was really pushing it by listing six subjects, honestly. I thought it would be add confusion to the folks that were taking the survey, and the results proved right. Some people actually had a hard time following instructions about how to rank ties in particular. Some respondents, I won't go into details about that, but I think that if you follow the instructions clearly, you'll know that, I won't get into it. As a result of that, I think the most important numbers aren't so much what fall under the numbers, but if you look, again, this is for questions 4, 5, and 6. If you look at the rating average toward the right, I think that's the most statistically helpful number to look at, given the way that people responded and they were a little confused about the directions about how to respond to the question. Okay. But anyway, why did I leave out logic and rhetoric? Well, I had to make choices. I had to leave out something. And I left out Bible. A lot of people said, well, what about Bible? I thought that would confuse matters because, well, of course, we have the Bible as the most important, so everyone's going to put that as most important. But then, do you mean Bible as most important to spend time on, or do you mean it as a set-apart subject? And I probably should have asked a separate question that got at that. I didn't, and I wish I had now, given some of the verbal responses. But I didn't include Bible because of for that reason. I had to leave some subjects out. I chose to leave out logic and rhetoric for another reason, and that's because I wanted to ask about basically the same subjects to see about people's views of how whether the priorities changed as you go through the ages. And so all the results would be thrown off if I swapped out the subject matter for the dialectic and the rhetoric. Does that make sense? So there was a reason why I didn't have logic and rhetoric. Those who got mad that they couldn't answer a question about how important logic is, sorry, but I had a reason for it. I hope I'm vindicated there. So if I had to do it all over again, I would have added questions. The written comments were insightful. I would have added questions that deal with Bible, about logic separately, and rhetoric separately, and I would have kept these as they were. I think it would be good to ask a question that went like this. Would you rank any subject equal to or greater in priority than logic at the dialectic stage? It became evident from the written comments that people would have said yes. And would you rank any subject equal to or greater in priority than rhetoric at the rhetoric stage? And it became evident from some of the written comments, people would have said yes. There are some things more important than rhetoric at the rhetoric stage. And I wish I would have, and then if so, what? And then I would have got the list. But if I were to do it again, I think that that question deserves to be asked because among mature educators, which is all the people surveyed, there's a divergence of opinion about that within our circles. I thought that itself was interesting. All right. So again, pay attention to the rating average. For everything that got a 1, it got 6 points. Everything that got a 2, it was 5 points. Everything that got a 3, it was 4 points, and so forth. And that's where the rating average comes from. All right. So that's a general introduction to questions 4, 5, and 6. Now, question 4 in particular. This asks about the elementary or grammar stage. And one thing I did was I looked at the respondents who were elementary teachers only. What you have in the handout is the respondents all put together, but I did, in my own analysis, separate out the respondents from age level. And I wanted to see if elementary teachers had a different perspective than, say, secondary teachers or board members about the elementary curriculum. And turns out that they all pretty much agreed, and that the results for the whole group will tell you pretty much how the elementary teachers fared on this question. Anyway, I thought that was worth noting. I do think, and this will be a theme that I'm going to develop here, it's worth pointing out that while science ranked last, look at science, 3.16 in the elementary. Elementary teachers ranked it last just like everyone else did, but they ranked it far lower, a far more distant last, a noticeably more distant last than everyone else. Elementary teachers scored science at 2.98. And you see the whole group together, that's well below the average. Okay, so that's question 4 taken by itself, question 5 taken by itself. I've already commented about why I omitted logic from the survey. But notice now that science has moved up from last place into fifth place. So science apparently creeps ahead in importance the further you go through the stages in people's estimation. Some people, and this again calls the need for the fact that I should have asked a separate question about logic. Some people commented that they put science the highest because they factored logic into science. And so the 15 people who put science first, I would suspect many of them had logic in mind when they put it there. So again, putting the notion that a science is pretty low, and you'll notice, and I'm going to talk about this at length, notice that music is pretty low, and I've got a lot to say about that in a moment. All right. Again, with regard to question five, these subjects, or what's posted here, are all the results together. Once again, I looked separately at how respondents of every category, elementary, secondary, administrators, board members, answered the question. And here, the elementary teachers came back into line with everyone else on science. So there you go. Okay, moving on to question six here. Science has now moved up two places into fourth from sixth. And classical language slipped from fourth to fifth. Apparently, we think that classical languages become less important the further up you go. That's what the general results would indicate. And I'm gonna comment more fully on the discussions of language that came out of this, but that's an observation to just note I want to flag to you, and then I'll make some more detailed comments later. Here again, the elementary teachers placed science at a lower priority than anyone else. This time, the elementary teachers put science next to last, whereas everyone else had science at fourth. So elementary teachers are down on science. I think that's a strong propensity among elementary teachers that deserves note. All right. Now, a couple of things to take away from this is that if subjects were running an election among ACCS educators, none of them won by a landslide. None can claim a mandate in this election. Given these results, I'm persuaded that if a handful of other people were surveyed, the results could have tilted. The rankings could have easily been tilted. You know, if we had the results, the dimpled Chads from Broward County in, that's all it would have taken to tip the scales. In other words, there's an interesting diversity of opinion here. I don't think I don't think we're conclusive on this. When you look at how close things are. But I think music, you see, is consigned to the margins, and that's a strong voice. And I want to comment on that. I'll pull up some remarks from the comments that the respondents offered about music. I want to make an observation about this. Some people were kind of reluctant to say, I like music, but I feel bad about ranking at last, but that's just how it is. And their comments reflected that attitude. One person said, although music is last in the listing of priorities, studies have shown that students who play a musical instrument score significantly higher on standardized tests, and so on. Another person said, I think that music is important if funds allow, but kids in large cities can get extracurricular exposure, so we don't necessarily need to focus in our schools here. One person said, I think music is really important. It was hard to put it last. One person said, I do not mean to indicate that it's unimportant, just not as important. One person wrote, music is not generally considered a core subject. It's an excellent class to encourage aesthetic appreciation and deeper thinking, which are traits that classical schools desire. So it's hard to rank it where I did. He says, music is not generally considered a core subject, which I find interesting given that it's one of the quadrivium. But the quadrivium is a whole nother thing that we'll get to in a moment. One person said, music, while invaluable, is not necessarily a core classical subject. It's not like the key subjects, Latin, logic, and rhetoric. That's what one person said. I find that interesting. On the other end of the continuum, there were passionate music people who, and it was clear that they had a sense that they needed to have their voice heard because they knew that they were in the minority even while taking this survey. And I could tell that by the flaming comments that they made. One person laments music education is relegated to enrichment rather than a fully integrated part of the curriculum, and that's a lament. One person wrote, we consider music and Latin as core courses. So a lot of people put music last, but there's very strong feeling on the part of a minority who says that's a mistake. So now science is interesting. Again, I'm sort of taking these three questions as a whole. Science ranked low, again, like music. But nonetheless, some people were downright passionate about it. An example of the low view of science was reflected in this comment. I don't think science is necessary in the grammar school. But nature studies are great if you can work them in. To some people, these are fighting words. And to other respondents, they certainly would have been. And maybe it was good that they weren't in the same room with one another. And I thought that a consistent comment about science deserves repeating, which is I saw a very clear sense of some people thought it was important but had a sense that we really have no clue what classical Christian science is. And I have a feeling that that's related to why it got a low ranking, is because of a lack of vision and clarity about what science is for, what its role should be. Now, there's an enclave of science people who are saying, hey, hear us, let us be heard, just like there were music people, and they're feeling like they're not being heard here. But one person wrote, and some of these resonate with my own anecdotal conversations with people. One person wrote, we've had a struggle in every level of science, the available texts of which I know are dribble. They're fundamentalist, young earth sappy, or they're secular. We need to teach a robust scientific method, but it gets crowded out because there's so much else to teach. I suspect that we are not alone. And I think that comment resonated with probably a number of respondents. I'm just picking out a few here. One person wrote, everyone seems scared of tackling a science curriculum that is logical and challenging to the mind as well as theologically sound. Again, this is that sense in the comp. This is a science fan who has a perceived sense that I'm all alone on this island of science advocacy in the ACCS world. You can see that tone coming through in the comment. And I think if you think science is important, I think this survey verifies that you are alone. You're alone. If you feel like you've got minority marginalized status, well, that's because you do. Now, whether that's good or bad, I'm not offering a comment here. I'm just saying that's the demographic. That's the way people think. Does that thinking need to change? Well, maybe this can shape the conversations that will take us to the next level. Okay, so that's where I'm at. Okay, another common thread then. So I've talked about music, I've talked about science, rhetoric, a lot of illuminating things about rhetoric. There's this, I would say, a widespread sentiment that we, as a collective of ACCS educators, do not have a clue about the rhetoric stage in general. Many comments were saying, you know, I don't know. We've tried this, we've tried that. We're not entirely happy with the results we've had. And very different. People are pretty cocksure about elementary stuff. The disposition is quite the opposite about rhetoric stage stuff. The absence of cocksureness, saying, boy, I don't know, this is hard. And the last question of the survey was, what topics do you think need to be addressed? Rhetoric area topics were one of the most widely expressed. And, you know, I think that makes sense with the growth of our schools. Most schools, as they grow and develop, start at the elementary grades, and then they add as those elementary students grow up, that's when the schools grow into the secondary levels. And a lot of schools that can be fairly well established at the elementary level are doing pioneering work at the secondary level. And anyway, there's, in my mind, a very clear sense of we need direction, we need guidance, we need to have a lot more conversations about everything, pretty much, at the rhetoric level. I'm casting it broadly there. There was some sentiment curricularly at the rhetoric level that the question of which subject to teach became less important at the rhetoric level. That's where we can move into more of an elective curriculum because of where the kids are. One respondent wrote, exposing students to the application of truth and presentation with teachers using the rhetoric methodology is equally important across the subjects, yet during the last 2 or 3 years, a narrowing and deepening of subjects can begin. The selection is dependent on individual calling and giftedness on the part of the student, not on the lesser greater value of the subjects themselves. And there are a couple of people who said, I think that the curriculum needs to move to, in a more elective direction as you get to the rhetoric level. So, all right. Questions 7, 8, and 9 all deal with language. It's structured similarly to the cluster of questions 4, 5, and 6 that were going across the curriculum. I wanted to ask some focused questions about language. And I thought it was interesting to find that Hebrew is consistently last, consistently low scoring. You'll see that if you look at those questions. Notice also that modern foreign language becomes generally, in people's perceptions, far more important later on in the curriculum. Many remark that students should be ready to move on from Latin. While Latin continues to get the highest marks of any one subject, notice how Latin has, look at the first place respondents across from question 7, 8, and 9 in Latin. 94% at the elementary or grammar stage put it at first, then a diminishing number put it at first in the dialectic stage, and then 44%, only 44%, a minority of people thought that Latin should be the most important language in the rhetoric stage. And the comments made this pretty clear. It's not that Latin's unimportant, it's that we should be moving on from Latin into some other material. All right. Boy, there was an enclave of Hebrew fans out there, though, just like the music people. Not as vocal, because I think there are fewer of them. The comments on these questions revealed that there is a language war in our midst. There is a language war in our midst. There were very strong and passionate statements that were diametrically opposed to some other strong and passionate statements in their assessment about how language is handled. One person wrote, had the gumption, the gall, the audacity to write this, and I thought this was provocative to say the very least. You should ask if the person filling out the survey knows another language other than English. This was a language person who suspected that the qualifications of people who are filling out this survey overtly calling them into question. It says, it shouldn't be surprising to find monolingual people, that is, exclusive English speakers, recommending that classical language be taught, since they are typically taught within English, no foreign language learned. This comments like this came up from a couple of people. There's a sense, and you can see that a comment like that is from a respondent who is steeling himself for battle in the first place. Again, I'm kind of a rhetoric guy, so I'm being a little bit qualitative here rather than just looking at numbers. But a lot of these comments are revelatory for their tone, which I think that speaks to something about what's out there fomenting in the ACCS culture. I think it was graciously offered. Nonetheless, it's a person stealing himself for battle. And this was definitely not the only one. One person wrote, as a Latin teacher, I am disappointed by the manner in which many schools seem to be turning away from the classical teaching of Latin, particularly in the grammar school. I think we need to take a harder look at Latin in the grammar school and how to train teachers and prepare teachers well for teaching this language. this is a person who is writing, not speaking to a turning away from the fact that Latin is happening, but a turning away from teaching it in a certain way. This person had has very definite vision about how Latin ought to be taught, and laments that others, as others out there, strongly suspicious of the people, the school across the state or something like that. Okay, language. There's a language war in ACCS. I'm not the one who declared it. I'm just the reporter. I'm the embedded reporter. So, and one thing that we see about this is not a war over whether Latin is important. That's not the war. The battle lines are not drawn over whether Latin's important. The battle lines are drawn in a couple of other areas. One of the key questions and the comments, again, I think qualitatively indicate this, and also part of this I'm interjecting some of just the conversational interaction I've had with others, and I need to admit that too, but I think it's reinforced, mutually reinforcing with the survey here, that I think that there is either a lack of clarity or outright or clear disagreements over why Latin is important. Some people say Latin is important in order to provide a better foundation in English and perhaps the Romance languages. If that's true, then why have a curriculum that parades Latin around for 8 or 9 years? Perhaps the reason why we teach Latin is not to provide this better foundation in language. Perhaps we teach Latin in order to get access to the classical texts in the original language. That's another vision for language and why language is important. If that's so, then people just point out we're a failure. Not to put too fine a point on it. If so many of us spend 8+ years of Latin, then why aren't the students truly functional in the language? We say our advanced students can translate Virgil or Caesar or Cicero into English, but that's ciphering. It's not engaging in literature. It's not engaging the literature. I'll illustrate this. This is my way of kind of unpacking the sentiment here with my own illustration. But if we were doing, say, Jane Austen or Dickens in a literature class in the 11th or 12th grade, we all know the kinds of questions and how they would be framed of the text and the analysis that we would have of the text. No one is doing that with any classical text. If we talk about how great our students are with Cicero or Caesar, it's still ciphering. We're only ciphering them. We're not really in. Why aren't we asking questions in Latin about Cicero's philosophy and reading Cicero in Latin to find the answers? Like we ask questions in English about Jane Austen. Okay, that's the. So anyway, is it to get it access to the classical texts? Again, then people point out, if that's the goal, then we're a failure. And I think that that's interesting. I had a personal anecdote that helped me resonate with this. I had a wonderful conversation with a student at New St. Andrews who spent a year and a half at New St. Andrews. She was from Iraq. English was her second language. Arabic was her first language. And she had really come up to speed. The language barrier was tougher. She was functional in English when she came, but reading the big fat books at our pace was pretty tough, as you can imagine. And she got pretty close to there after a year and a half at New St. Andrews. But she was transferring back to the University of Jordan. They were going to place her at the top level of English class at the University of Jordan, and she was lamenting what that meant for her, and she thought it was just so pathetic. She said, I'm going to spend an entire semester with the top students, and we'll read maybe a quarter or a third, say, of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice in English, because what will we be doing? We'll be ciphering it in Arabic. Is she getting Jane Austen? It's called a Jane Austen class, Advanced English Literature, at the University of Jordan. We would think, that's not advanced literature at all. But, okay, let's turn the tables now and apply that rule to the teaching of Latin and classical texts and how we interact with Virgil or Cicero or Homer. Anyway, there's a I'm trying to characterize the language war here. If it's to provide a better foundation in English, why so many years? If so many years, why so little success? And boy, people recognize this, and people have their opinions about what the problem is, and their opinions about what the problem is or the other guy, the language war. We need to have some conversations about this. I'm reporting the war and trying to characterize the nature of the war that I see. There's also inductive and deductive methods get rolled into that discussion. Okay. Enough about those questions. Moving on to questions 10 and 11. With these two questions, I was trying to get at some nuance of how we conceive of classical and Christian education. And question 10 was a flop. But I resurrected myself after question 11. The response to question 10 indicated that I didn't frame the question well. Who's not going to say both? And it depends on what emphasis you put on the word primary in the framing of the question. Look at how I framed the question. Does it entail both? Most people think, well, of course it does. And so it landed heavily there. It would have been far better if I'd changed the options from pedagogy, curriculum, or neither one prioritized over the other, something like that. That might have gotten a better, clearer result. It was a badly framed question. However, I think that hope springs eternal here, and question 11, particularly questions A through C, got at the real answer that I was looking for in question 10 anyway. Questions A through C clearly show that within ACCS circles, people think that pedagogy is what classical education is all about. I think overwhelmingly so, as you see the numbers there. And it's one of my favorite. 11A was actually one of my favorite questions. I thought I was clever. Some people commented, or one person commented, define auto mechanics. Well, I appreciate that you were taking the survey seriously. Anyway, but is it? I was trying to take some subject that's obviously removed from the classical or medieval world, and then see if you can still apply classical ed adjectives to it. Most people said yes, you can, which indicates that most people think that when you're talking about classical education, we're having a pedagogical discussion more than we're having a curricular discussion. Which is what I wanted question 10 to get at, but question 11 saved me here, and that's what. All right. Anyway, that came. If you look at A, B, and C collectively, that I think that's verified. Okay. If Latin was the paradigm classical subject, then it's classical. When if you're teaching Latin, you're classical. You know, people would have put no if they were thinking classical education is curricular. Okay, enough said about that. There's a consensus. There's no war here. I think there might be a war with some other people who put the word classical as an adjective to education, but within ACCS circles, it seems like there's a pretty good consensus there. D and E. I think the comments were very helpful in this, and I believe that there's actually a very strong one of the clearest consensuses here. Even though the numbers don't show that, the comments informing the numbers indicate that. Those who put it yes talked about how important computers are, but there's a consensus that it's not part of the program. And I thought one of the most helpful, and this is representative of many comments about computers, one person talked about the importance of computers, but he says, and so are vacuum cleaners. But we don't have a vacuum cleaner class. So, of course, they're important. And I thought that actually captured a sentiment of really what's the, I think that's a good representative of the drift around our circles here. Some people said, well, perhaps an elective or something like that. Okay, but not so with questions F and G. And you'll notice I was trying to distinguish with D and E about get people to get at the distinction between classical and Christian with D, E, and F and G. And it seemed to me from the responses that people weren't actually noticing that subtle difference. Very few people noticed that. And so I need to come up with a way to say, okay, what of our education is classical, what's Christian, and what do we mean by those two terms? I was hoping by those questions to flesh out that distinction, and I didn't do it because people were seizing upon computers and athletics because they wanted to talk about computers and athletics more than suss out the distinction between classical and Christian. And athletics, there's another war. And the numbers show it. Athletics is a big issue that needs to be discussed pretty seriously. A lot of interesting comments came out about it. There was the comments revealed a distinction that if I were to do this over again, I would improve the survey and distinguish between competitive athletics, like interscholastic athletics, and physical education. A lot of people make a distinction that way, and I think that that's a helpful distinction. So shall we field a basketball team? That's a different question than what happens in the PE class. I just had the word athletics. There were two people who thought that I asked about aesthetics. Are you here? Can you read? One person wrote a long treatise about what they thought about aesthetics. And I thought, I didn't ask that. Maybe I should have. Okay. So reflecting on some of the comments, then I'll just read some to you that I thought were insightful and helpful in the conversation anyway. One person wrote, yes to athletics when understood in the context of physical development, reflecting the whole person as God created it. I do not believe that athletics necessarily requires organized large team sports against opposing schools. In school competitions, school houses, etc., all these venues can be used to foster physical development, competition, teamwork, and good sportsmanship without the expense of warping of priorities that can come with athletic departments. There's a person saying yes to PE, not necessarily. It wasn't saying no to fielding teams, but not necessarily with fielding teams. Which invites a question that some PE people came forward with, and that is, why is PE so wimpy? Okay, if the goal is really to discipline the body, then why does PE look so much like recess, but just where there's someone monitoring it with some rules and organization? Well, you can monitor with rules and organization typical classroom activities. A lot of elementary teachers are experts at that, and that's very important in the elementary education, is following rules and organization and some teamwork kinds of things. But is PE really delivering some kind of regimented, serious discipline of the body and a cultivation of skill with the body? And is that important to classical education and Christian education? It's a question worth asking. PE often gets a short shrift, doesn't it? Is that good? Is that bad? It's a fact. Anyway, I think that athletics, like languages, is an area where we need to have a lot of conversation. There's differing points of view. Let's see. Reflecting a common impulse here. While I do not think athletics is essential to classical education, I think it contributes greatly to Christian education about the character lessons in team and individual sports. And again, most of us who were athletes or former athletes at whatever level, who appreciated the discipline and the skill cultivation over time, find themselves and saying, boy, that was so good for developing Christian character. If you take that and you put it up to how PE is conducted, it doesn't measure up. And that's why I believe some people saying there are some people who say you've got to have real competitive athletics because you don't find it in PE. You don't find those things in PE. And there are people who insist that you've got to have a serious athletic program if you're going to cultivate the body in the way that the ancients have said you need to. Okay. Next question, question 12, I thought was one of the fanciest, most interesting questions. It even in your handout has vertical font. So there you go. Isn't that snazzy? And This was one of the questions, because it involves conversations that I've been in personally. I was so interested in this one. Perhaps others of you were interested in others, but this I thought was going to be the most interesting one. And I find that I'll make some observations that have to do with some of my own experience outside of this. Most people said organized by era. I should add by way of introduction further that some people were just confused by this question. The question confused them. But I asked very clearly scope and sequence. When determining scope and sequence, the basic organizing principle, such as course titles and how your courses are organized. You know, I think everybody understands that subjects are an important organizing principle at some level and that eras and historical periods are important organizing principles. But which is going to be basic? Are you going to have, and here's the most obvious way to put it, are you going to have literature class and a history class, or are you going to have omnibus? Okay? And that's the way it expresses itself. By the answer to this, it would seem that most people are in favor of omnibus, but by the comments, it made me wonder whether they understood the question. And I also know anecdotally, I've seen many of your schools and your curriculum guides, and there are very, very few schools that are pursuing an omnibus approach. Okay? And so I hope you see how that's demarcated. Do we talk about everything in the Middle Ages, be it philosophy, theology, literature, art and architecture, that sort of thing? And so we've got this medieval studies class. Or do you have a history class? And then do you have a literature class? And do you have... And again, the comments and my own observations indicate that most schools seem to have the subject classes, but they want to see those subjects aligned. For example, if you're, just to take a hypothetical, if you're going to be doing medieval history in the 10th grade, you should be doing medieval lit in the 10th grade at the same time, so that there's going to be some cross-pollination, and that seemed to be the preferred approach. So the, and that's an interesting admixture. I appreciated a couple of comments. One person wrote, and this reflected the sentiment that was expressed by several, our staff would not be qualified to organize scope and sequence by era. To have one teacher teach the Middle Ages and to do justice to philosophy and architecture and history and so forth, there's just the running into the practical problem of who's going to teach that class and do it well. One person, again, wrote, how to find teachers who are able to integrate philosophy, literature, history, and art history. How do you find those teachers? And it occurs to me that, and I think that there needs to be some reflection on this fact. I'm a history guy. I'm going to be pursuing a PhD in history. I've got a master's degree in history. And coming from a history guy, I hope I'm qualified to say this, that there are other logics besides chronologic. There are other logics besides chronologic. In other words, if you discuss everything that's going on in the Middle Ages throughout the 10th grade, okay, then you might be talking about, say, William of Ockham or somebody like that in December. But you're not picking up on a philosophy thread, the influence of Ockham into early modernity, until a year and a half later. Is that really integrative of knowledge? Remember, there are other logic besides chronologic, and causations and connections sometimes, honestly, do get lost when you organize in a strict way by era. But then again, are there important cultural associations? I think it's important to connect Beethoven and the French Revolution, which few people do. That's an interdisciplinary connection. Not to say that organizing by era is meaningless, but I think we need to get a little careful and nuanced about this and our conversations. I think this is an area where our conversations need to mature. And I'll put this back to an earlier comment I made. This is one of many reflections about where I think people are kind of crying out for more matured conversations about what to do at the rhetoric stage. I've mentioned people feeling adrift in the rhetoric stage. I believe this is an illustration of it. Lack of consensus, some strong opinions. A lot of people think, how do I do this? How do I run into practicalities? How do I work through this? That kind of thing. Okay. Question 13. Some of the photocopies didn't get question 13. Some of them did. It would be a page 6. And if you didn't get it, that's fine. I think you're not going to be lost without it. I listed a number of books just to find out where people were reading. And as a history guy, I have to... First, I was gratified to see that most people had read Dorothy Sayers, although a few hadn't. People who had... These are all people surveyed who are in ACCS member schools who have been involved for 5 years or more. And some of them hadn't read Dorothy Sayers. Most of them had read Doug's books, Doug Wilson's books. A very strong majority have read Doug Wilson's books. Less than half, these are educators 5 years or who've been around 5 years or more again, hadn't read the ACCS position papers. I thought that was an interesting show of hands at this point would be, how many of you were unaware that ACCS had position papers? I'm not going to do Okay. But I also find it a little scary that there isn't a higher representation of experienced ACCS educators who have actually followed Sayer's advice, gone back to the medievals, and actually read those who originally framed the seven liberal arts in the codified form of trivium and quadrivium like they have them, who would be Martianus Capella and Cassiodorus. But I'm just an anal history guy, so there's my exhortation to all of you that we should be conversant. I don't believe that everyone's called to the detailed literature, so I don't think that they need to be read universally, but I think that readers of these things and familiarity with the education that we're trying to go back, we need a lot more people like that within ACCS culture to weigh in on the conversation. I'll put it that way. I don't think that everyone's got to read those books, but it's kind of like in the church. You need I don't think that everyone's called to read the Greek New Testament, but there should be a lot of people in the church who are reading the Greek New Testament, who are involved in the conversation and the accountability and that sort of, it's kind of that principle. So maybe if you can say, I'm not called, then that's fine. God bless you. Okay. Bringing it in for a landing here, which I need to do, I've walked through the questions and just some quick general observations, much of which I've anticipated here. I hope this has been helpful. My goal is to be a service to ACCS, the ACCS community, to try to articulate what conversations do we need to be having to carry us into the next level. And it's not necessarily a conversation. Maybe it's a conversation that you have settled in your mind, and a lot of the conversations we need to have, I think, are conversations that some people, or many people, have settled, but others, our brothers and sisters, have settled them in a different direction. We need to have the conversation. And so, to offer a practical suggestion, and a practical suggestion without strings attached to me, I like suggestion into the ether. Who's going to do this? I don't know. I'm not in charge of that. But first, I really would encourage within ACCS circles a forum where ideas can be presented from different perspectives, where the participants are chosen because of their different perspectives, and settled perspectives that are different, perhaps moderated, but in the engagement, iron sharpening, did to, did not. I think we need some did to, did not conversations. And I think we need to have those kinds of conversations about in the following areas. I think we need to have them with regard to many questions in the languages. Many questions or questions about the organization of subjects versus the omnibus approach, athletics and PE. And then finally, and this would be very difficult to frame, but we need to frame discussions about the subject turf wars. And framing the forum, I'd have to give some thought to do this, but it's not so much that, someone's going to argue that music is important. you're not going to find someone who will articulate, oh, music is unimportant and I have a settled position on that. No, we need to frame, how can we frame the question, and this is a task that we need, how can we frame a question that gets at the priority of subjects and has real engagement about it, rather than, here's why music's important, because no one's going to say, no, you're nuts, it's unimportant, you know. But how can we, and I haven't thought about how to frame the question, but that's a conversation we need to have. And I think it needs to be had with different perspectives chosen. About the manner of conversation, I think we need to understand, first of all, that some people are really touchy about this. When you're talking about Latin, your opponent may have written a book. And maybe the sales of his book are at stake in this debate. That's not hypothetical. This kind of stuff happens all the time. And so there needs to be a sensitivity and a Christian graciousness in the interaction. Someone has been teaching this way for 8 years, and you're telling them that for 8 years they've been wrong? And I think we need to have the conversation, but let's be big people about it. Let's be sensitive about it, rather than some sort of open debate. So how can we do that? That's a real challenge. Okay. Secondly, I think that we should recognize that the best practitioners are not necessarily the best theorists or advocates of how it ought to be done. I think the participants in the debate should be selected not so much because they're the gee whiz elementary educator. Maybe it's someone who doesn't teach Latin at all but really has a lot of interaction with Latin and is an articulate with respect to pedagogy and can represent the position well. Sometimes the dear teacher is great with second graders but isn't great in a forum like what I'm describing. We should recognize that and have the forum with people who can participate in the forum. This isn't teacher training. I'm talking about the administrators, the people who have been around a while should have these conversations like this. Okay, so I think a call for forum of engaging ideas in those areas is called for. Secondly, I think we need forums in other areas that are structured differently, which is maybe more of the brainstorming forums. And these would be pretty much everything in the rhetoric area. rhetoric stage stuff. Get rhetoric teachers who are doing a good work saying, here's what I do, and it works. Oh, here's another thing that I do, and it works. I honestly don't think, after looking at this survey, that we're mature enough to even frame where a debate is. With regard to rhetoric, I think we need to do some more spade work with regard to rhetoric stage materials. Okay. And with regard to the rhetoric stage, I'll put my mock trial team up against yours any day. And I'll see you on Saturday on that. Science, boy, science needs to be right there in the thick of it, too. That's an area, probably conversations at both of those levels. And I'll leave you with that. Those are the results of the survey. And so as a collective, start talking with one another. Thank you all.